Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, 6:46, 14 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. I'm not quite sure where the ceasefire stands this morning with Israel and Iran. Patrick Penfield joins us now, professor of supply chain practice at Syracuse University. How you doing, Patrick?
Good, Tommy. How you doing?
I'm okay. Tell me about the relation on all of this to supply chains and what supply chains could be affected.
Yeah, I think the big issue here is if we see this, conflict start to escalate, then we would see something happen to the price of oil. And so, Tommy, as you probably know, energy is extremely important, especially when you're growing an economy or trying to produce goods. So about 20 million gallons or barrels of oil actually go through the Strait of Hormuz. And so that's the concern. So if the Iranians decide to close that down, then it could cause oil and gas prices to go up pretty high.
So when it comes to the Strait of Hormuz, and we're going to talk to Jeff McCausland, the CBS military analyst, when we come back about the, I'll just let the audience know this, Patrick, or you can listen if you like, about the military ramifications of this. But when it comes to the Strait of Hormuz, it's what, 16 miles wide? Is that right?
Yeah, it's a choke point, basically. And yeah, it's very, very narrow. So, it connects the Persian Gulf to the Arabian Sea. So, that is really very vital from an oil shipping standpoint. So you've got Saudi Arabia, you've got Iran, you've got Iraq, you've got Kuwait, you've got Qatar. They all ship oil through that, through the Persian Gulf, through the Strait of Hormuz. Yeah.
So when it comes to the United States military and doing what they can to keep Iran from closing the Strait of Hormuz, if that is the only concern as it relates to supply chain, how likely is it that the Iranians could do that if they chose to?
So from what I know, they've already authorized, their army to go ahead and close it. So I think the dilemma that the Iranians have is that they make a lot of money using the Strait of Hormuz. So if they were to close it down, that would, impact them, from a monetary standpoint. So it's not in their best interest to do that. But again, let's say the Israelis decide to bomb their, refineries and they can't ship, oil or gas. And, that's a different ballgame then, right? Mm-hmm. So they would say, hey, we might as well close it. So I think there's a lot of ifs and thens and what's, that are going to happen in probably the next 60 days that'll kind of tell us, what's going to occur here. But nonetheless, if anything does disrupt that, you'll see some issues with supply chains. And that's the other thing. I mean, most of this oil and gas goes to Asia. So if they can't get energy, then they can't produce goods. And then if they can't produce goods, then they can't ship that stuff to the United States. And then, we'll see longer waits. We'll see prices go up. And so it's just a huge, snowball effect that potentially could happen.
I don't know anything about navigation. I know I looked it up. It's 21 miles at its narrowest point, the Strait of Hormuz. Is there any way, and maybe this is more of a question for our next guest, the military expert, but that the Iranians could scuttle any ship or anything like that and close this? Or is it too wide for that? And they would have to actually, I don't know what closing it looks like, I guess is what I'm asking, Patrick.
Yeah, you know, they can close it. So there's easy ways to do that. You know, they've got boats, they've got mines, they've got, you know, they can just fire missiles. So there's a whole bunch of ways, and I think your military expert probably will tell you more so than I. But it's not difficult to close that, and so it's happened in the past. So again, that is something that the Iranians can do if they want to. So it's just a question of, you know, what happens, and hopefully this escalation will simmer down. But I'm not really quite sure, because it seems like things are going to keep are progressing or starting to move back into a you know, delicate situation. So
let me take a break. We'll come back. We'll pick it up here, talking to Patrick Penfield, our friend, a professor of supply chain management at practice at Syracuse University, about the ceasefire between Iran and Israel. And we're talking about supply chain interruptions. If oil prices go up, I guess that can filter down to consumers because of higher transportation costs for goods. And who is who would be the winners and the losers in this if that happens? And you would think the losers would step up to keep this from happening. But we'll find out when we come back. 650 traffic now, WWL. 656, 4 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Patrick Penfield, our friend, professor of supply chain practice at Syracuse University. Next hour, we're going to talk to Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst, drill down on the military part of the Iran-Israeli conflict, but we're talking about supply chain issues with Patrick here. So if the Strait of Hormuz is closed, there's going to be winners, there's going to be losers, right? Or are there going to be any winners? Who are the losers, and how likely are they to get involved to make sure that it reopens or this doesn't stay closed for long?
Yeah, I would say your Middle Eastern countries, Kuwait, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, UAW, Qatar, those are probably the big losers, because they obviously would be not having any revenue. Then you've got all the countries in Asia that are very dependent on this oil. So China, Vietnam, you know, they would be, you know, suffering. And then, you know, us as consumers, your listeners, you know, eventually what will happen is we'll see higher prices, and that will be oil, gas, and, you know, anything that has plastics, you know, anything that uses oil and gas as far as part of its product.
So what I'm hearing, Patrick, and correct me if I'm wrong, is, and I just try to reduce it to, you know, look, I grew up in a gas station and a tire store, to that kind of level, which is, well, if you got all of those people against Iran, it would seem like the deck is stacked against them, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's all about revenue, right? So, you know, that's the thing. But again, because they kind of control that choke point, you know, the Strait of Hormuz, you know, that's the dilemma, right? So they can close it down. They can make it very difficult for those countries. And so, you know, that's kind of the dilemma, even though, you know, there you've got some strong countries there, you know, they can control, you know, what happens. And so this is kind of the dilemma.
So that's what I'm trying to understand. I understand, you know, when it comes to Middle East, people tend to think Muslim hate America, blah, blah, blah. There are different sects of Muslims. I understand that. But I guess what I'm trying to figure out is nothing trumps money. And these Middle Eastern states are more concerned about money than anything else. It would seem as though they would do what they could to get Iran to open the Strait of Hormuz if they decided to close it. Or am I making too fast of an assumption there?
I think you're probably right on. I think, you know, the hope is that it won't close. And I think it's in Iran's best interest that doesn't happen, because they're very, very dependent on that oil money also. So if they were to close it down, it would hurt them. So I think the thing is, as long as the Israelis don't destroy their refineries or their oil operations, I don't think the Iranians will close it down. However, they have voted that the army can, if needed.
If the Israelis don't destroy the Iranian oil operations?
Correct, because if they were to destroy the Iranian oil operations, then there would be no reason why not to close it, right? Because they wouldn't be making any money. But right now, the Iranians are making money. They ship a lot of their oil to China, and so China is very dependent on Iran. So that's the other dilemma. You know, if the Chinese, you know, get involved, then, you know, then again, that could be another situation that potentially could happen.
Yeah, you don't want that to happen at all. I would think the Chinese are working whatever back channels they could to keep the Strait of Hormuz open. We'll see. Thank you, Patrick. I appreciate your time and your insights. We'll talk to Jeff McCausland, our friend, CBS military analyst, when we come back, about Israel and Iran here on WWL. All right, 7:14, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by our friend Jeff McCausland, Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst, to talk about Iran and Israel and the United States and the Strait of Hormuz and the military aspects and all that. How you doing, Colonel?
Tom, I'm doing well. Long time no talk. We're going to talk about all those things. We're going to be on all morning, but go ahead.
Good to talk to you again. So let me ask you this. We were talking to a guy that worked in the Trump administration yesterday, and he gave me an analogy about intelligence that I thought was pretty interesting. He said, at best, it's a Van Gogh with dots that represent a picture. At worst, it's a Jackson Pollock, where it's just a lot of different spurts and you got to figure out what's going on. And I mention that because that really resonated with me, as I think, you know, I don't know what's going on in Iran. I don't know what's going on in Israel. I don't know what's going on with President Trump. I don't know any of that. Does anybody really know what's going on, or are we making educated guesses here? I'm talking about the principles with Benjamin Netanyahu, whoever's in charge of Iran and President Trump.
Well, you get intelligence from various sources, and you get preliminary intelligence, and that intelligence develops over time. Preliminary intelligence for this would be, of course, primarily satellite imagery of what the destructive area, making analysis from that. And second of all, I kind of like the Jackson Pollock example, because I would say it starts with Jackson Pollock, maybe moves to Van Gogh, and then moves more to a photograph as time goes on, and you get more information, and you're able to better analyze it. Furthermore, intelligence is a matter of probabilities. You'll get no intelligence expert I ever worked with in the Pentagon or the White House and say absolutely 100% this is what's going on, unless he's talking about last night's baseball scores. So this is all a matter of probabilities. And this preliminary assessment by the DA, not surprisingly, very conservative. A lot of intelligence services, oh, by the way, became a lot more conservative after the invasion of Iraq in 2003. Recall that we said that there was weapons of mass destruction. We weren't there. So that kind of now has made them a lot more conservative in their analysis. So as time goes on, now you'll get more data. You'll get human intelligence. You'll get signal intelligence as we monitor various Iranian telephones and radio networks to see what they're saying amongst themselves. And from that, you'll get a bigger picture, and eventually you'll get a report out, probably classified or most assuredly classified, by the Director of National Intelligence, because her job is to synthesize all of the analysis of the eight different agencies that comprise our intelligence services.
So let's talk about President Trump for a minute, because I always, you know, say, I don't know if he's crazy or crazy like a fox, but saying that either neither Israel or Iran knew what the blank they were doing, you know, on one hand, I could see where that's no way for a president to talk. On the other hand, I could see where he's sending them a message through the media. And maybe he might have pulled off a thing where he did what he could to shut down Iran's nuclear capabilities, or at least deter them for a while allowing Iran to stay in the oil business, to keep the Strait of Hormuz open and to keep China happy. Talk about that, if you will, with China and the oil from the Middle East and going to Asia, and the Rubik's Cube that is when it comes to foreign diplomacy, please.
Well, that's exactly right, Tom. You got to back out and look at this geopolitically. Mr. Trump is not the first president who was profane, I guarantee it. He may have been the first public president who was profane publicly when he did that. Those are the kind of conversations that happen privately. But if you move out geopolitically and you say, how does this affect a lot of people? Let's start with our friends, the Russians. Where's the first place the foreign minister of Iran goes after these strikes? He goes to Moscow to visit with Vladimir Putin, of all people. And Putin is very, very sad to hear what happened. But he really is not going to offer any assistance. Why? Two reasons. One, he likes to see the United States distracted in Iran. He doesn't want us to get involved in the war in Ukraine. And Mr. Trump right now is sitting at the NATO conference in The Hague. He wants us to go away and let him do what he can with the Ukrainians. Second of all, the price of oil goes up. That's good for the Russians because, of course, they're a great exporter of oil. Then we move over to our Chinese friends, as you mentioned, Tommy. And they got a lot to worry about. 20% of the world's oil passes out through the Straits of Hormuz, not only from Iran, but from Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia. All these countries use that particular export lane, and probably 40% or more of all Chinese oil imports come from the region. So the Chinese are very worried about the effect this might have on our economy. And it was interesting, publicly, Secretary of State Rubio did what? He requested publicly that the Chinese urge the Iranians not to close the Straits of Hormuz, knowing that they would fully do that because they're not interested in getting involved in a conflict in the Middle East, number one, and number two, they're worried about their economy.
It's in their own best interest. Why would they not, right?
Exactly. Why would they not? Now, they might say, well, you might argue, well, on the other hand, this is an opportunity for the Russians, the Chinese, to more closely seal this sort of quasi-alliance that they've created that include not only those two countries, but the Iranians and the North Koreans, and some people say the Venezuelans, these sort of four autocratic nations that are pushing back on the United States as one of the primary leaders of the globe.
So when it comes to the big losers, if the Strait of Hormuz was closed, we're talking China, Russia, who else?
No, the Russians would win because the price of oil goes up, Russian oil goes up. Russians win, Chinese lose, Saudis lose big, Emiratis lose big. Okay, a lot of countries, some countries in Europe and Asia beyond the Chinese, Japanese, Koreans suffer pretty badly if the Straits of Hormuz are closed up. And that narrow strait is only about 20 miles wide. There are two lanes, ships, and there's only two lanes there that ships can pass each other going in and going out. So even with minimal military efforts, some small boats, a couple of short-range store-to-sea missiles, you can close that thing up pretty doggone quickly.
That's what I wanted to ask you. My next question was, when it comes to, I don't know, do you scuttle stuff in the Straits of Hormuz? Do you close it for a long time? Do you mine it? What does it look like militarily to close the Strait of Hormuz? I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think China wants it to happen. But what would that look like if Iran tried to do it?
A variety of ways you could do it. Just as you said, in the past, you know, way back in the Reagan administration, we had the so-called tanker wars where the United States had to put ships in the area to escort oil tankers into and out of the Straits of Hormuz. At that time, the Iranians used a lot of sea mines to exactly put in that area. All you have to do is have one vessel get struck, and all the oil companies say immediately, not putting my ship in there, and the insurance on those particular ships goes skyrocketing. And that's the problem. It's a similar problem in a way, metaphorically, to what the Houthis were doing in the Red Sea. Again, a narrow sea passageway. A lot of goods pass through the Red Sea to go up through the Suez Canal to go to Europe and elsewhere. And so by threatening those sea lanes, you only have to do it a few times, and people start going someplace else because of the potential loss of enormous ship and the cost of the insurance to cover the maritime activities.
So when it comes to the other Arab nations in Iran, I know people tend to think that it's all Muslim against Christian, but there are different sects of Islam. Right. But then it's all about the money as well. I think you got to follow the money before you do anything when it comes to the Arab world. I don't think the Arab world would want the Straits of Hormuz to be closed either, right? So what do they do with Iran? Are they working back channels as it relates to Iran or not?
Absolutely. They do not want the Straits of Hormuz closed. Like I said, you know, Saudi Arabia, huge country, but most of the oil production facilities, refining and export is all on the Persian Gulf. So all Saudi oil pretty much has to go out through the Persian Gulf and the Straits of Hormuz. Obviously, same for the Emiratis, same for the Qataris. And you're also quite right. Ain't no love lost between the Saudis and those other folks and the Iranians. Trust me, quietly, Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, is pretty happy to see Iranian military power taken down a notch because they're no longer a threat to him. I've met with the Saudis repeatedly, and they've always been worried quietly about Iran as a regional threat and a competition that's gone on for decades between Saudi Arabia and Iran on who is sort of the regional major power there. So they're happy that they've been taken down a notch. That being said, they're also worried. Why are they worried? They don't want to see a wider war in the region that might engulf them. The Saudis, remember back in 2019, there was an attack ostensibly by the Houthis, but most people thought supported by the Iranians, in which using some missiles and some drones, they attacked a Saudi oil facilities right along the Persian Gulf and did a number on a large number of Saudi Arabian oil facilities. And in similar fashion, all those countries have facilities like that, pretty close to the Persian Gulf. They are enormously vulnerable to being attacked by missiles or drones, and therefore very vulnerable if this was to get out of hand.
When it comes to what happens from here, I can't believe President Trump would take it easy on Israel or them developing a nuclear weapon. If he's willing to say that's enough for now, and Netanyahu is saying, no, it's not, I got to go with President Trump on this one. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's true. But we have to get to what I could call, and then what? Okay, military power is a means to an end and not an end. And a ceasefire is just freezing things in place. Now, we've been in a ceasefire between us and the North Koreans since 1953, but that's hardly tenable. So there's got to be an and then what? There's got to be some kind of a negotiation now that goes after the root causes. I dare say, what will that include? Well, that will include some ability for the International Atomic Energy Agency, probably plussed up by others, to visit Iran, look at these facilities, make that absolute assessment about how badly they were damaged, account for that 800 pounds, hello, of active material that we don't know where that's at, what happened to that. And then furthermore, there'll probably be some demands for Iran in future to limit the range it develops on its ballistic missiles. Furthermore, there may be some demands on Iran that they forswear providing resources to all these proxy groups that they have supported throughout the region, most of whom have been pretty beat up by the Israelis. So we're going to have to get to that, and then what, if we're going to bring this to a larger settlement. But Tom, you know, we might be in a moment where we see really a transformation of the Middle East coming out of this particular conflict, which could go either way. It could go for a whole lot better, a lot more normalization with Israel, and therefore more economic development, or frankly, things could go very south.
I know maybe it's too early, but as it relates now, snapshot in time right now, what grade would you give the president on handling this?
I'd probably give him about a B minus, to tell you the truth, because on the one hand, yeah, you conducted a military operation. It went well. That's great. Certainly commendable to all the military personnel that operated in that particular regard. I think his willingness to work with Congress and provide them updates, they're not going to get briefed till Friday, is a little bit out of hand, frankly. And then finally, I still would argue, Tom, whether you're supporting this particular operation and you're the greatest supporter of President Trump or you're his biggest critic, you might look at this and say, you know, there was no imminent threat. The president even said, we can wait 2 weeks to think about that. There was no imminent threat to the United States of America that was going on here. And, you know, and furthermore, I would say this was an act of war. I mean, if they bombed 3 nuclear facilities on U.S. territory, we call it an act of war. So as a consequence, I think the president had time to go to the Congress for a vote. And if he'd gotten that vote, his position vis-a-vis the Iranians, if there was a possibility for diplomacy, would have been a lot stronger. And by golly, the message he would have sent to the Chinese, the Russians, and the world at large about how united the United States.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Would have been a lot larger.
Thank you, Colonel. Appreciate it as always. Hope we talk to you again soon. Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst, 726 Traffic, WWO. 747, 13 till 8 quickly to Norma Jean Matei, professor of engineering at UNO, past president of the American Society of Civil Engineers, my alma mater, UNO, I'm proud to say. Talking about a story we had at WWL.com, Don Redman, the AAA, says Louisiana ranks fourth in the country for worst road conditions, according to a report by Consumer Affairs. And drivers are paying, on average, about $600 a year more as a result of that. Morning, Norma Jean. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm doing great. I'm in D.C., actually.
In D.C.? Why?
Talking about climate change and how we can build more resilient communities.
Well, there you go. How about that? Tell me about resilient roads and streets and everything, because in advance of you coming on, I was thinking, and I remember as a kid, hearing on WWL, as a matter of fact, that, you know, this road had buckled or that road had buckled. I saw in Missouri they had a road that buckled, Cape Girardeau, Missouri. But I don't see that as much of that happening here, but if the climate's changing and it's hotter than it's ever been, have we done things to keep the concrete or whatever it is from buckling here?
Well, it has buckled in the past. Some of your listeners may remember where a section of concrete street on Severn in Metairie buckled, and this was years ago. I was trying to find it because I can't remember the year, but it was quite a while ago. So it's all a function of how, because when things get hot, they want to expand, and if they can't expand, things like buckling can happen. And that's what happens when you get into these significantly higher temperatures, when the change in temperature just increases so quickly that something gives, and in a pavement that can be a concrete slab that buckles. And it's happened in Severn, and it's happened a few years ago in various parts of Louisiana, too.
So are we doing anything different to accommodate for that, or can we do anything different to accommodate for that? And let me take you back to, I guess, I don't know if you want to call it substrate for road or whatever you want to call it. Is there a preferable way to build a road?
Well, when you have concrete panels, because it's the two roadway materials we use, concrete and asphalt. The problems with extreme heat are very different for each of those different materials. So concrete panels, being more rigid, they buckle if they can't move. And so you'll notice that in sidewalks, in driveways, and in streets, and in bridges, you'll have gaps. So they'll have a pavement section, it's just a segment, and then they leave a little gap. There's usually a joint material in there. Initially, there was a joint material in there that is able to smoosh when it gets hot and the pavement expands. But you need to have that initial gap, one, big enough for the anticipated change in temperature. So we're seeing higher temperatures. So that could be a possible problem. And another problem is if you don't maintain those different sealants, those they'll get brittle. We'll have stuff that gets in there that doesn't squish, and that causes problems.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What happens, because we all have it in our patios and driveways, et cetera, the material erodes, and then weeds start growing up through it. And maybe we think that mud is as squishy as that original stuff was, but it's not, and that's what causes it to buckle or not?
Well, it can be that problem. It can be that, one, the gap isn't big enough anymore because the difference in temperature is greater, so the increase in length is greater. And it can be that you've got non-flexible materials that have fallen in there that then once that pavement moves up against it and it won't allow that movement to happen. And so
if you're talking
the pavement,
if you're teaching people to engineer roads in Louisiana, is there a dividing point where the soils change? Where, okay, from this point down, you want to do this. From this point up, you can do this.
Well, that's an interesting question. So, yes, the pavement types and the selection, and it's not just the pavement that sits on top. You've got to prepare the subsurface. Mm-hmm. So you take out undesirable material to a certain depth, and then you put a designed set of layers of different dip types of materials, gravels, sands, and you have to compact it to a standard. So, because what you want to provide your roadway is a bed that it can sit on that provides you're transferring all of those loads through the pavement into the ground. So a major truck, that wheel load, it's not the pavement transfers it to the ground. The ground is holding the pavement and the truck up. Mm-hmm. So if you've got poor materials or there's a lot of utilities that are running below your roadways, and if your joints if they're not properly maintained, that allows water intrusion. You can then have, because truckloads and automobile loads are moving, you can pump out that wet material and then cause a void underneath the pavement, which is another problem.
Is there a part of the state? I was watching a movie the other day, and they were blasting out a foundation for a building, and you know, I was thinking, here, we don't have that problem because we don't have any bedrock. But is there a portion of the state where there is bedrock and then where there isn't, or do we have that anywhere in Louisiana?
Oh, the Mississippi River, that big old man river created this big, huge alluvial plain, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are not really blessed with bedrock. Now, up in the northern part of Mississippi, right along the Mississippi River, you'll see some rock, but it's an outcropping. But on our side, not so much. So it's if you really pay attention, it's a distinctive difference.
So the answer would be no in Louisiana, but in other parts of the country where there's
definitely not southeastern Louisiana.
In other parts of the country where there is bedrock, does that lead to longer road life?
It depends. And so if you have better material to found your roads on, then some of the issues that we have, they don't have, but they can have other issues. To say, if you're in a desert area where you've got no chance of some arroyo being a transit of the very rare heavy rains that they get, so you don't have to worry about that, that's a good foundation. But think about that high, that the sun is it's mercilessly beating down on that pavement, and that can cause a problem too. So.
I think I'm going to stick with my old car. Thank you, Norma Jean Matte. Good luck in Washington. Professor of Engineering at UNO, past president of the American Society of Civil Engineers. 755, 5 till 8. Traffic now, WWL.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide. Or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball. The game's official home for games is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.